from WAMC in Albany. This is the Legislative Gazette, a weekly magazine on New York State government and politics. Your host is Dave Gillette, with commentary by political scientist Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University of New York at New Paltz.
Coming up this week, we'll have the full story on the first gubernatorial debate. Alan Shartok will be along for some analysis. We'll also take a look at the important election issues in New York City. Those stories, and Paul Rosenthal will join us with the Legislative Notebook. That and more on this week's Legislative Gazette. New Yorkers had their first of two chances to see four of the state's gubernatorial candidates go at it last week. Syracuse was the site of the first gubernatorial debate, and our Brian Shields has this report.
Lots of arguing over figures and attacking other candidates. Those were the two main themes of the first gubernatorial debate October 19th. After months of wrangling over who would participate, and the times and places as well, the Democrat and liberal candidate, incumbent Mario Cuomo, Republican Pierre Renfray, conservative Herb London, and right-to-life candidate Lewis Wien gathered in Syracuse. Renfray and London both concentrated on what they call Governor Cuomo's fiscal mismanagement of the state. London was asked how he would make sure the state could finish the fiscal year without a debt.
George Orwell once said the first duty of intelligent people is the restatement of the obvious. Mr. Renfray wouldn't know the obvious if it hit him in the face, and Mr. Cuomo quite obviously cannot state the obvious. This state is facing very serious financial problems, not this year, but over the last 8 years. Why are we now talking about cutting the budget? We should have been talking about it the last 8 years. The personal income tax in New York is the highest in the United States. The combined state and local taxes, considering the mandated reforms pushed down to the local level, are now $164 of every $1,000 that are earned. $164. Think about that. Who is responsible for this deficit? After all, someone has to be accountable. It can't all be put at the doorstep of Mr. Marino and Mr. Miller.
Renfray took aim at the state economy during a question which was supposed to address how to make education in the state better.
I don't think anybody should be allowed to be in office much longer than 6 years. I think the assembly limit should be 6 years. I think the Senate limit should be 6 years. And I think, above all else, the governor limit should be 6 years. And I think right at this stage, it wouldn't be a bad idea for Mario to resign before he gets thrown out in an election. Because the reason, the problem that we've got in this government and the failure to act, and I agree that the behavior of this Cuomo administration, 9% compound rate of growth since 1983, 88% in his entire term, taxes go for every dollar of tax cuts, and there have been tax cuts, $1.37 of tax increases. You can't talk just the income tax. You got to talk user fees.
Renfray, who throughout the campaign has called London and Wien peripheral issues, did not respond to any attacks from London and did not even appear bothered by them. Lewis Wien stayed away from any remarks that could be perceived as an attack, even though London had some harsh words for Wien.
He appears to be a cheerleader for Mr. Cuomo. I think there is blame that can rest at the doorstep of Mr. Cuomo, not only on the matter of spending, but certainly on the matter of education as well. During the 8 years under Mr. Cuomo, we have had more than 100% increase in educational expenditures in this state.
Wien would later say he was no cheerleader for Cuomo. He added he was discouraged with attack after attack made by the candidates.
You're no good. You've overgot the taxes. You can't do this. I called Mario Cuomo up when I first got the nomination, and he called me back as a gentleman. And I said, Mario, we have an opportunity to create a new era of politics. Let's stop the finger-pointing, let's stop the name-calling, and let's address the issues in an intelligent manner. I can tell you that Mario Cuomo has kept his part of the bargain, and I have kept my part of the bargain. I am not a shill for him. I'm not looking for a job, as Mr. London said I am.
More and more figures flew around the room during the debate, and as quickly as Renfray and London threw them out, Cuomo threw corrections back just as quickly.
We are not the highest income tax state in the United States of America, although my opponents have said that over and over. We are 12th. The number 164,000 per 10,000 or whatever it is pure fiction. There is nothing like that kind of mandate on local governments in this state. Over the last 8 years, we have increased aid to the local governments from 60% of our budget to 68% of our budget. As far as business growth is concerned, we lead the United States of America in the formation of new corporations. Our growth in personal income is above the United States of America's average, and our business growth was 30% over my tenure. As far as cutting expenses, I tried very hard. The Republicans and the conservatives spent $1 billion more than I asked them to and raised $200 million in taxes.
And as quickly as Cuomo made those corrections, London came out with some corrections of his own.
The Public Policy Institute of New York State has pointed out that the combined state and local taxes are $164 for every $1,000 that are earned by people in this state. And I'd suggest that the governor look at this document before he makes the claims that he does.
As the Right to Life candidate, Ween took time to point out that neither Renfrey nor London shared his uncompromising pro-life views. The funniest part of the evening came after another series of Cuomo corrections of economic figures. Renfrey decided he had had enough.
If Mario ever came in an economics class of mine and I taught advanced economics for 7 years, I'd give him a double F and throw him out of the class because his numbers are the phoniest numbers I've ever seen. We pay $750 per year per capita in taxes.
When it was Cuomo's turn to respond, he wasted little time.
If ever I come to your economics class, I shouldn't be flunked, I should be committed.
We'd like to thank WTVH, Channel 5 Television in Syracuse, for their permission to use highlights of the debate in this report. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Brian Shields.
Joining us now is the Legislative Gazette's political analyst, Dr. Alan Shartok of the State University of New York College in New Paltz. Alan, how do you think the first debate went?
Well, I think that if you examine the debate in the context of the strategies of the people who were participating in it, you can award grades differently than if you say who won or who lost. Mario Cuomo's idea, of course, was to keep that debate, to act gubernatorial, to keep it as low-key as possible, to get out there without allowing anybody else who was way behind to score on him or off him, as they may say in a neighborhood. So he did that. And from that point of view, he did very well. When Renfrey said terrible things about him, he sort of just smiled at him very benevolently. And as almost everybody picked up, it caused Renfrey to get, in my opinion, nuttier and nuttier during the debate. I think that Ween, the Right to Lifer, did not distinguish himself. But I think the guy who did very well, which I have said before, who is no dummy, is Herb London, the conservative candidate. And he, I think, articulated standard Republican values far better than the Republican standard bearer, Mr. Renfrey, did. And he was not, as I had more expected him to be, concentrating on Renfrey. I think he really let Cuomo have it as much as he possibly could. So that he made good points, he made the standard points, and he did it in an effective speaking manner. And I would say, therefore, he came very close to being the best performer in the debate if you were just looking at how it seemed person to person to person to person.
It would seem, however, that very few people comparatively were tuned in. The end, did this debate mean anything at all?
Well, they always mean something. It had the potential, if Cuomo had messed up, even if very few people were watching it, the press certainly would have picked up on it. But as you know, Renfrey said, I would have given you a flunking grade in my economics class. And he said, if I had taken your class, something like this, I would have had to be committed. That's what everybody picked up. That was the bite everybody in it that appeared in every newspaper. Now, if Cuomo had really messed up, we would have read about it in the newspapers, even though the World Series was going on while the debate was happening. So I don't think it's important that a lot of people didn't see it. It had the potential for real danger for Cuomo. It turned out not to be meaningful.
Legislative Gazette political observer Dr. Alan Chartok. For another view of the debate, our Mike Fondacaro spoke with Fred Dicker of the New York Post.
Well, I approached the debate as somebody who expected Pierre Renfrey, who's obviously trailing the governor quite badly, to do something dramatic to try to gain momentum, to try to grab the headlines, frankly. And from that point of view, I think he failed. I think Renfrey, while aggressive, wasn't aggressive or certainly not persuasive enough to score some points. On the other hand, I think the governor appeared defensive and looked uncomfortable, didn't have good answers to a couple of very tough questions about the state of the state's economy. And I think to the extent that the public perceives him or perceived him as defensive, he came out a bit of a loser on the debate. The two other candidates, Herb London for the Conservative Party and Lou Wien for the Right to Life Party, I thought both did reasonably well, and more importantly, from their point of view, got statewide exposure. So I think because of that, because they didn't make major gaffes and they looked like respectable alternatives, they did okay, and they're probably winners in this whole thing. But if we view the debate as a boxing match, or use a boxing match metaphor, there was no clear victor, and in my judgment, there wasn't even a knockdown. To me, the bigger picture story about the debate is that it was only one of two debates. It had a very limited format. I think it's disgraceful that the people of New York State won't have more opportunities to see these four candidates. And I think it contributes to the cynicism that exists out there that the number of debates is so severely limited.
Do you think Governor Cuomo was being cautious so as not to slip up during this debate?
I think that's precisely it. I think the governor and his advisors told him to keep his head down. Don't give any ammunition to your opponents. Don't take any risks. Don't run the risk, for instance, of doing something on television which will be captured forever and could come back to haunt you in a presidential race, could be used in commercials against you down the road sometime. I don't think that serves the process very well, but I think it's a traditional front-runner incumbent strategy, not to do anything which in any way could endanger the easy time you're going to have in an election.
You mentioned that Lou Wien and Herb London got some very important statewide publicity, but at this point, does it really make a difference for them? Do you think Herb London still has the chance of beating Renfrey and giving the Conservative Party the row on the polls for the next 4 years?
Well, since nobody expects any of the three candidates, Renfrey, London, or Wien, to win, I think the London and Wien exposures in the debates were very important for them in trying to raise their numbers up a little bit. Obviously, neither of these two minor party candidates is going to win, but for the candidate like Wien, it could be this kind of exposure will mean the difference between 1 or 2 percentage points in the polls or 3 or 4. For Herb London, it could be even more significant. I still think there's an outside chance, and I know many political experts and insiders believe there's a chance, that Herb London could outpoll Pierre Renfrey, an outcome with dramatic implications for New York State politics. And to the extent that Herb London did well in the debate, and is seen as a thoughtful, knowledgeable individual, I think it's important for his efforts to do that because he'll be seen by disaffected voters who don't like Governor Cuomo as perhaps a more reasonable alternative than Pierre Renfrey.
A lot of the reporters were very pessimistic about this debate. Can we expect much, much more of the same in the next debate 2 days before Election Day?
Chances are yes, although we've learned over the months that Pierre Renfrey is anything but predictable. And it's possible that in the last debate, which really comes at a ridiculously late date, that Renfrey may do something unexpected. There's some speculation around now that Renfrey might do something which would just shock the Republican Party, and that would be to announce that he's urging his supporters to vote for Herb London in order to punish the Republican Party. We don't know that that's going to happen, but there's some speculation something dramatic will happen. Chances are the last debate, though, in all candor, will be something of an anticlimax. By the time 2 days before an election this debate is held, virtually all voters will have made up their minds. I don't think that debate's going to have much of an impact at all.
And finally, Fred, your favorite line from the debate.
I think it has to go to Governor Cuomo, who in response to Pierre Renfrey's amusing observation that if he, Cuomo, had been in Renfrey's economics class, he would receive a double F, Cuomo rejoined, "Did Pierre Renfrey, if I was ever in your economics class, I shouldn't deserve a double F. I should deserve to be committed."
Fred Dicker of the New York Post. Now that we've heard how the candidates did as politicians, how do they do as debaters? Lee Farbman spoke with an expert on the subject and filed this report.
Kathy Kendall is a professor in the Department of Communication at the State University of New York at Albany. She specializes in political communication and has done research on political debates. To judge a debate in an academic manner, she employs the criteria used in judging an intercollegiate debate. The affirmative side is the side arguing for the change. In this case, the affirmative side consists of Pierre Renfre, Herb London, and Louis Wien.
You have two main responsibilities. You have to show that there's a need for a change, that there's serious problems with the status quo. And second, you have to show that you have a plan to meet the need. And the plan would be that that you are a better alternative to the status quo. And if you're defending the status quo, which is called the negative side, then you need to show that things are going quite well now and that with minor changes, we should continue with the status quo. And so
Kendall says it's harder for the affirmative side to win since it does have to prove the negative side wrong. And how did the negative side, Governor Cuomo, do?
I thought that he won the debate because remembering that he had the presumption, he had the advantage in the first place of really having to defend the status quo, but unless the other candidates were able to perform their two main functions of the need and the plan, they wouldn't win. And the three challengers attacked him for his administration, the way he was conducting his administration. I think there was a toll taken on Governor Cuomo in the course of the hour, with three people attacking the way he governs, in spite of the fact that he showed a great deal of competence, which is an important image trait. He showed a great deal of competence in defending his administration.
Well, what about the affirmative side? Renfre, London, and Wien.
I thought that Mr. London was especially good at attacking, in that he had facts and figures. He seemed very well informed and presented his information in a very clear and pointed way. Mr. Wien was a surprise in that I expected him at least to be focused primarily on his main issue as a right-to-life candidate, but instead he showed much more breadth and knowledge and as a newcomer to politics, at least a newcomer to the political audience, he, I think, was a surprise in that he knew much more about the state than we had known before the debate. Mr. Renfre, however, was a very weak debater because he was so poorly organized, and that has the effect that he never was able to drive his points home, so that right at the beginning his ideas just came tumbling out. He would not finish an idea. He would then go on to another one and then on to another one, so that nothing was really clear about what the points that he was making. And all of this was made worse by his flailing physically, sort of waving his arms, and that contributed to the impression of this person as very, very disorganized.
For the record, Professor Kendall says Cuomo finished first, London was second, Wien was third, and Renfre was fourth. But she thinks this debate will not play a role in deciding the election. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Lee Farbman.
You're tuned to the Legislative Gazette on Public Radio. I'm Dave Gulletley. We continue our series of discussions next with reporters from around New York. This week, the Legislative Gazette's Mike Fondacaro spoke with Dick Hinchliffe, the news director of WNYC Public Radio in New York City.
Former city council president Carol Bellamy is running for state controller, of course, this year. How much support can she expect from her fellow city residents?
Well, I would think she would get a lot of support. She's very well known here, as you mentioned, former city council president, also former state senator. She ran for mayor against Edward Koch in 1985, a losing bid, but certainly kept her name visible. And more recently, she's been an investment banker on Wall Street, so that she looks toward her experience both as a Wall Streeter and as a politician and says, put that together and I can do a better job as state controller than the incumbent Ned Regan. So I would expect she would gain a lot of support in the city. And especially a city that's beset by its own fiscal problems, many voters are going to the voting booth and perhaps thinking the state controller is the state's chief financial watchdog, chief fiscal officer, and perhaps the state controller can help out when it comes to the city's fiscal problems as well. And Carol Bellamy may be the one to do that, of course, in a heavily Democratic town.
On to other big elections. Jose Serrano and Susan Molinari are the two new congressmen from New York City. Do they? Do you see any tough challenges for them?
Really don't. Serrano from the Bronx, Molinari, Staten Island, taking over her father's congressional seat, Guy Molinari, who became the Staten Island borough president. Also from the Bronx, Elliot Engel, a newcomer, and all three look pretty solid, so that New York City's 14-member congressional delegation looks to be in good shape without serious threat. I think they can all rest fairly easy that they'll be returning to Congress.
Can the same be said for all the members of the Assembly and the Senate?
It would have to take an upset to oust any of them, and of course that could happen, but at this point, with the election still a little bit of a ways off, it seems unlikely that any incumbent faces a serious challenge. So they all look to be in good shape as well.
What do you see as being the key issues in this year's elections?
Well, it's interesting. The governor's race, of course, is a runaway, although our neighboring states, it's a very lively contest in both Connecticut and New Jersey. But here at the top of the ticket, it's only a question of how much will be the margin between Cuomo and Renfrey, probably. So the voters are looking perhaps more carefully at the referenda, and these are the more interesting questions right now. The Environmental Bond Act, a $2 billion bond proposal that would provide for land purchases, recycling programs, closing some landfills, historic preservation. If it passes, $100 million of that would go toward the West Side Waterfront Park that is being proposed along the Hudson River in Manhattan. All nine previous environmental bond issues have passed, but this one is getting a closer look, and that's because of the fiscal questions. And the question growing in the city and across the state is, can we afford this bond issue? Controller Ned Regan is opposed to it. Carol Bellamy, the Democratic opponent, is in favor of it. Fear and fray against it, strong support from the governor and mayor, David Dinkins, here. So this is developing into an interesting question. It looked to be a sure thing, but with the fiscal problems besetting the city and the state, it may not pass as overwhelmingly, or it may be defeated. We don't really know right now. Another referendum question is that on Staten Island secession. If that passes by the Staten Island voters, that would set up a commission to study secession. So there would still be a long ways to go, years and years to go, before secession might become a reality. But supporters hope that this will be the first step toward Staten Island going it alone, breaking away from the city. Staten Islanders who support secession say they're not getting a fair deal from the city. They're paying too much in terms of taxes and having to be the site of landfills and drug treatment centers and so forth, and they're not getting enough in return. So those two referenda look to be interesting questions on the ballot this year.
It seems every day we look at the New York Post or the Daily News up here, Mayor Dinkins' face is always on the cover. What is the situation with the mayor right now? How do you perceive it?
Well, it's just as you put it. It's front page news almost every day, and it's really been not much of a honeymoon with this first-time mayor. And he's just had all sorts of problems in getting his program across and also convincing voters that he's in control and that his administration has a coherent plan to tackle the problems of New York City. Now, his critics admit that the city's problems are not subject to quick-fix solutions, but on the other hand, they say that Mayor Dinkins does not seem to have an overreaching, coherent plan, and that he's, in some cases, appears to be lurching from crisis to crisis, week to week. So that when it comes to salary raises for the teachers, 5.5% raise, and the other big unions, DC-37, the Teamsters jump in and they want a 5.5% raise as well. The city says we really can't afford it. The mayor wants to put more and more police on the streets, but that's going to cost money. Taxes may go up as a result. Possibility of 15,000 municipal layoffs. Most recently, top pay cuts announced. These commissioners will have to take a 5% cut. So this mayor has his hands full, and that's deflecting a lot of the attention that might otherwise go toward the ballot in November, because the mayor is on the hot seat, and we'll just have to see how all that plays out.
Dick Hinchliffe of New York City's WNYC speaking with the Legislative Gazette's Mike Fondacaro. Joining us next with a look at some of the other events taking place in state government this week is Paul Rosenthal with our Legislative Notebook.
GOP gubernatorial candidate Pierre Renfrey filed a lawsuit demanding Governor Mario Cuomo take steps to correct a near $250 million shortfall in state revenues. Renfrey, who served a copy of the suit at the governor's office in Manhattan's World Trade Center, is asking the court to force state government to implement an emergency spending reduction plan to close the gap. The suit, filed in state Supreme Court in Albany, also asked the court to require Cuomo to revise his budget projections for the rest of the year to reflect the shortfall announced last week by State Controller Ned Regan. Officials in the governor's office are calling the action a publicity stunt. State Conservative Party leaders released their rating of the state legislature, giving three legislators a perfect score. Conservative State Chairman Michael Long says in the Assembly only Bath Republican Donald Davidson, Hopewell Junction Republican Glenn Warren, and Potsdam Republican John O'Neill voted the conservative position on 13 measures. In the Senate, Queens Conservative Serfin Maltese, Bath Republican John Kuhl, and Port Jervis Democrat Arthur Gray received the highest ratings. The party rated the lawmakers according to how they voted on the death penalty, abortion funding, and stiffer penalties for bias-related crimes. Long says if more legislators received a 100% rating by the party, New York would be a better place to live and conduct business. Herbert London, the Conservative Party gubernatorial nominee, called on Governor Cuomo to abandon his proposed $2 billion Environmental Bond Act. London says the cost of borrowing the money will total $3.5 billion. He called Cuomo a watermelon for proposing the plan, saying the governor is green on the outside but red on the inside. London says 20 cents of every tax dollar goes to pay off the state's existing debt and says the Bond Act would boost taxes even more. London was particularly critical of using $800 million of the borrowed money to preserve land. In the Conservative Party candidate's words, adding some trees and squirrels to the Adirondack Park is not going to help the residents. A leading economist says the nation's savings and loan crisis will have a large impact on the economy of New York State. Dr. Edward Hill, a professor of urban studies at Cleveland State University, says New York ranks first in the country in terms of how much it will pay toward the national bailout of savings and loan companies. He says New Yorkers could end up paying more than $17 billion as part of the $203 billion bailout. Hill also says New York could be one of the last states to climb out of the spreading recession, largely because of the loss of jobs and financial institutions in New York City. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Paul Rosenthal.
And that about does it for this week's show. Join us next week at the same time for more news of New York State government. For the Legislative Gazette, I'm Dave Gallatly.
The program is made possible with grants from the Legislative Gazette, the newspaper about state government. Subscription information available by calling 518-473-6482. And Empire Information Services, serving New York and New England with electronic news release distribution.
The first of the two New York State gubernatorial debates is over. I'm Dave Gallatly. On this week's Legislative Gazette, we'll have analysis on the participants, both as politicians and debaters. We'll also look at the important election issues in New York City. Join us each week for the Legislative Gazette.